Of course I went straight to Patty. She was my better half then as she is my better half now. She did not throw cold water on the project. What she said with her dear face aglow with excitement was, "I only wish, Phil, I was going with you." Heaven knows, so did I. Next morning I was up before the milkman. I had told my people overnight I should be going out of town on business. A young fellow I knew had won a revolver at a raffle and willingly lent it to me. With that and my rifle, I felt I could conquer an army. It was a lovely afternoon when I found myself walking through leafy lanes in the heart of Medeshire. With every vein of my heart, I loved the country, and the country was looking at its best just then. Grass ripe for the mower, grain forming in the ear, rippling streams, dreamy rivers, old orchards, quaint cottages. Oh, that I had never to go back to London, I thought. I walked a long way, and being uncertain as to my road, asked a gentleman who was slowly riding a powerful roan horse, accompanied by a young lady mounted on a stiff white pony, my way to Ladlow Hall. "That is Ladlow Hall," he answered, pointing with his whip over the fence to my left hand. I thanked him and was going on when he said, "No one is living there now. I'm aware of that." He did not say anything more, only courteously bade me good day and rode off. The young lady inclined her head in acknowledgment of my uplifted cap and smiled kindly. Altogether I felt pleased. Little things always did please me. When I got to the lodge, I showed Mr. Kerrison's letter to the woman and received the key. "You are not going to stop up at the hall alone, are you, sir?" she asked. "Yes, I am," I answered, so uncompromisingly that she said no more. The avenue led straight to the house. It was bordered by rows of the most magnificent limes I had ever beheld. Between the trunks of the trees I could see the deer browsing and cattle grazing. At length I stood in front of the hall, a square, solid-looking, old-fashioned house, 3 stories high, 4 windows to the right of the door, 4 windows to the left, all the blinds pulled down, a dead silence brooding over the place, the sun westering behind the great trees studding the park. I stood for a moment under the ample porch, then I fitted the great key in the lock, turned the handle, and entered Ladlow Hall. I found I was in an immense hall, from which a magnificent old oak staircase conducted to the upper rooms. The floor was of black and white marble. Around the walls hung pictures, antlers, and horns, and in odd niches and corners stood groups of statues and the figures of men in complete suits of armor. I stood lost in amazement and admiration, and then I began to glance more particularly around. Mr. Kerrison had not given me any instructions by which to identify the ghostly chamber, which I concluded would most probably be found on the first floor. I knew nothing of the story connected with it. Regarding the mystery, I was perfectly unencumbered. I had not the faintest idea in which apartment it resided. Well, I should discover that, no doubt, for myself ere long. I looked around me. Doors! 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 I had never seen so many doors together all at once. 2 of them stood open, one wide, the other slightly ajar. I'll just shut them as a beginning, I thought, before I go upstairs. The doors were of oak, heavy, well-fitting. After I had closed, I tried them. Yes, they were quite secure. I ascended the great staircase, feeling curiously like an intruder, paced the corridors, entered the many bedchambers. For the most part, the doors were closed, and I shut those that stood open, before making my way into the attics. I was greatly delighted with the attics. The windows lighting them commanded wide views over wood and valley and meadow. "What a beautiful place," I said. "Kerrison must have been a duffer to leave it." And then I thought, what a great ramshackle house it was for anyone to be in all alone. Getting heated with my long walk, I suppose, made me feel chilly, for I shivered as I prepared to go downstairs again. In the attics, as in other parts of the house, I closed the doors, leaving them securely fastened. I'll take the kitchens next, I decided, and so made my way to a wilderness of domestic offices lying to the rear of the great hall. The mystery that troubled Mr. Kerrison could scarcely lodge amongst cinders and empty bottles, and there did not seem much else left in this part of the building. The evening shadows were drawing on apace, so I hurried back into the hall, feeling in a weird position to be there all alone, with those ghostly hollow figures of men in armor, and the statues on which the moon's beams must fall so coldly. I would just look through the lower apartments and then kindle a fire. After a good cup of tea, perhaps I should not feel the solitary sensation which was oppressing me. The sun had sunk below the horizon by this time, but there was still light enough in the hall to see all objects distinctly. With my own eyes I saw that one of the doors I had shut with my own hands was standing wide. I turned to the door on the other side of the hall. It was as I had left it, closed. This, then, was the room. This with the open door. For a second I stood appalled. I think I was barely frightened. That did not last long, however. There lay the work I had desired to undertake, the foe I had offered to fight. So without more ado, I shut the door and tried it. Now I will walk to the end of the hall and see what happens, I considered. I did so. I walked to the foot of the grand staircase and back again and looked. The door stood wide open. I went into the room after just a spasm of irresolution, went in and pulled up the blinds. A good-sized room, 20 by 20, lighted by 2 long windows. There were 2 recesses beside the fireplace, one fitted up as a bookcase, the other with an old and elaborately caned cabinet. I was astonished also to find a bedstead in an apartment so little retired from the traffic of the house. Beside the bedstead, I perceived another door. It was fast locked, the only locked door I had as yet met with in the house. It was a dreary, gloomy room. Any crime might have been committed in such a room, I thought, and then I looked at the door critically. When I passed out, I not merely shut the door securely, but bolted it as well. I will go and get some wood and then look at it again, I soliloquized. When I came back, it stood wide open once more. Stay open, then, I cried in a fury. I won't trouble myself any more with you tonight. Almost as I spoke the words, there came a ring at the front door. Echoing through the desolate house, the peal startled me beyond expression. It was only the man who had agreed to bring over my baggage from the train station. I bade him lay them down in the hall, and while looking for some small silver, ask where the nearest post office was to be found. Not far from the park gates, he said. If I wanted any letter sent, he would drop it in the box for me. The mail cart picked up the bag at 10 o'clock. I had nothing ready to post then, and told him so. He paused with his hand on the lock and asked, "Are you going to stop here all alone, master?" "All alone," I answered, with such cheerfulness as was possible under the circumstances. "That's the room, you know," he said, nodding in the direction of the open door. "Yes, I know. What, have you been trying to shut it already, have you? Well, you are a game one." And with this complimentary, if not very respectful, comment, he hastened out of the house. Evidently he had no intention of proffering his services towards the solution of the mystery. I cast one glance at the door. It stood wide open. Through the windows I had left bare to the night, moonlight was beginning to stream cold and silvery. Before I did aught else, I felt I must write to Mr. Kerrison and Patty. So straightway I hurried to one of the great tables in the hall, and, lighting a candle, sat down and dashed off the 2 epistles. Then down the long avenue, with its mysterious lights and shades, with the moonbeams glinting here and there, playing at hide-and-seek round the boles of the trees, and through the tracery of quivering leaf and stem, I walked as fast as if I were doing a match against time. It was delicious. If it had not been for the door, I should have felt too happy. "Look here, Phil," I said all of a sudden, "life's not child's play, as Uncle truly remarks. That door is just the trouble you have now to face, and you must face it. But for that door, you would never have been here. I hope you are not going to turn coward the very first night. Courage! That is your enemy. Conquer it!
I will try, my other self answered back. I can but try. I can but fail.
The post office was at Ladlow Hollow, a little hamlet through which a stream dawdled, spanned by an ancient bridge. As I stood by the door of the little shop, asking some questions of the postmistress, the same gentleman I had met in the afternoon, mounted on his roan horse, passed on foot. He wished me a good night as he went by, and nodded familiarly to my companion, who curtsied her acknowledgment.
"His lordship ages fast," she remarked.
"His lordship? Of whom are you speaking?"
"Of Lord Ladlow."
"Oh, I have never seen him."
"Why, that was Lord Ladlow."
You may be sure I had something to think about as I walked back to the hall.
"Lord Ladlow, my word! I thought he was hundreds, thousands of miles away. And here I find him, walking in the opposite direction from his own home, I, an inmate of his desolate abode." "Hi, what was that?"
I heard a noise in a shrubbery close at hand, and in an instant I was in the thick of the underwood. Something shot out and darted into the cover of the further plantation. I followed, but I could catch never a glimpse of it, and I had at length to give up the hunt, heated, baffled, and annoyed. When I got into the house, the moon's beams were streaming down the hall. I could see every statue, every square of marble, every piece of armor. For all the world it seemed to me like something in a dream, but I was tired and sleepy, and decided I would not trouble about fire or food or the open door till the next morning. I would go to sleep. With this intention, I picked up some of my bags and carried them to a room on the first floor I had selected as small and habitable. I went down for the rest, and this time chanced to lay my hand on my rifle. It was wet. I touched the floor. It was wet likewise. I never felt anything like the thrill of delight which shot through me. I had to deal with flesh and blood, and I would deal with it, heaven helping me.